Welcome to Speak for Yourself. I'm Jason Whitlock. That's Marcellus Wiley, that dude. Coming up, we'll tell you if the Cowboys are really back on track.
And if the Steelers even need Le'Veon Bell. That's ignorant. All right, we start today with a Whitlock. What you got today, big dog?
Oh, I got Tom Brady. Tom Brady made me realize two things last night. Number one, he's the fourth head on my Mount Rushmore of sports alongside Muhammad Ali, Michael Jordan, and Babe Ruth. Number two, I don't want more than an athlete. I want my great athletes to be great athletes. I want them to entertain me the way Tom Brady has the last 18 years. I want them to create miracles on the field and on the court. I want them 100% committed to their sports. I want Michael Jordan, not LeBron James. Tom Brady is football's Michael Jordan. I realized that last night with 7 minutes to go in the game, the Chiefs and the Patriots, and Brady and the Patriots trailed 33-30 and were facing third and one from their own 34-yard line. This was the play of the game. I expected the Patriots to hand the ball to one of their backs because the Chiefs defense couldn't stop a runny nose last night. Instead, Brady dropped back to pass and unspooled a 42-yard bomb to Chris Hogan. The pass was so perfect that Hogan caught it even though there was a Chiefs defensive back hanging on his left arm. My mind was absolutely blown. Tom Brady is 41 and throwing the ball better than he did at 31. The Patriots went on to win the game because Brady is a more accurate passer than Patrick Mahomes, the league's next great superstar. Tom Brady is obsessed with athletic greatness. Virtually all of his energy, beyond family, goes into honing his athletic skills. He's an old man and still adjusting his throwing motion.
If you do that, you have torque. If you do this, you don't have any torque.
That's what I feel. So it's that.
Yeah. All right.
I've got to be here. I just got to get this.
How easy is that? You see how relaxed you feel up here?
Yeah.
Money. Money. I don't know what that ball did, but that's a perfect delivery.
That's why Tom Brady is still the best player at such an advanced age. I wish every athlete followed the Jordan Brady model. Money ended the Muhammad Ali model. We keep longing for the modern Ali. We fail to see that the conditions that created Ali are no longer there. You need the military draft, the Vietnam War, legalized segregation, and athletes truly connected to the black community to create the next Muhammad Ali. What we have now in LeBron and others are small corporations connected to larger corporations with a primary function of generating revenue. Ali answered to a religious sect devoted to black empowerment. James answers to Nike and Hollywood enablers. More than that, money and pampering have disconnected most athletes from reality. When the world starts catering to you by the age of 10 or 12, and you're rich beyond your wildest dreams by age 21, you have more in common with Justin Bieber than Darnell Washington.
Man.
In 1990, the rapper Rakim popularized the saying, "It ain't where you're from, it's where you're at." I'd also add, it's how you got there. Playing fields can teach us many important life lessons, but when the fields are lined with gold, those lessons are often corrupted and diminished. Gold fertilizes greed, not character. White athletes don't carry the expectation of being more than an athlete. Tom Brady isn't producing or starring in talk shows centered around mediating rap beefs between Drake, Pusha T, and Kanye West. Brady hasn't launched a sports agency, made himself the face of a grade school, or thrown himself into presidential politics. Tom Brady is what LeBron once aspired to be, the greatest athlete of his era. Brady, not LeBron, stands alongside Ali, Jordan, and Ruth. All right, joining the desk now is NBA champion Dante Jones, former NFL great and future Hall of Famer Tony Gonzalez. Marcellus, I'm going to start with you.
Yeah.
Am I right that Tom Brady is the greatest athlete of this era,
speaks
superior to LeBron James?
You're right in putting him in that world, in that realm of he is one of the greatest of this era. But you're wrong if you say and crown him as the king of this era when the king is still out there and balling at the level he is. Let's stay on the field. Let's stay on the court. Tom Brady, greatness. But the way that LeBron became great wasn't tied to the greatest coach of all time. The way LeBron became great wasn't tied to him being a part of a system. And the way that LeBron became great distanced himself from even the number two of his generation on the court versus a Tom Brady who still has his skeptics that say, is he even the greatest quarterback of this generation when I hear a Peyton Manning and Aaron Rodgers name come to the conversation? So if you look at it on the court, on the field, the gap between LeBron and number two and Brady and number two is far greater with LeBron. But let's go one level deeper off the court, off the field. LeBron's brand. It's amazing that you made this mistake of confusing a smaller brand as being more laser focused. And that's what Tom Brady looks like to you in perception. He's more focused. He does have TB12. Don't forget about TB12. It's a smaller brand compared to the King, who's coming out with his 16th edition with a lifetime contract with Nike. A smaller brand doesn't mean you're more focused on football. It means that you are not as great and as grand as the other guy who's been doing this, as well as his greatness on the court. So for me, LeBron trumps Tom Brady. Mm.
Dante, before you go, oh,
The man's got five titles in the hardest sport to play. He plays the hardest position in sports. The distance between him and Peyton Manning just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger every time Brady lines up to play, as it did last night. So the distance between Brady and all of his contemporaries, including Drew Brees, any of them, Aaron Rodgers, five titles. Aaron Rodgers has one. And then the other, that partnering with the coach, that is one of LeBron's weaknesses and one of Tom Brady's strengths. He don't even like Bill Belichick, but he's still making it work. That's what makes him even greater. Dante, I know you want to jump in.
The two greats on your Mount Rushmore did it the same way LeBron James is doing. They set the tone. Michael Jordan set the tone for the way LeBron James is doing it now. You know, like, Michael Jordan is associated with Nike. He created a brand of shoes that has outlived his career. What you are supposed to do as an athlete. When I came into the game of basketball, athletes had a little short amount of time on the field or in the gym. But off the court, we did a lot of things that were not productive. We spent a lot of time in clubs. We spent a lot of money in a strip club. We did all those things. And the
still
conversation was, no, but not at the rate, at the at ridiculous rate that they were doing it back then. However, the whole conversation was, why are so many black athletes going broke? Because we were not using our capital and our money in ways that could outlive our careers. So right now, when the NBA put into us that you are a corporation, you're not just an athlete. The NBA taught us this, that you are, that you can use these things and create things rather than just use that time to do things that are meaningless. So we demonize a guy who took his crew and rather than just paying them money.
Demonizes way too.
Well, the media demonizes that group.
No, they don't.
Instead, because they put them in internships, taught them. And we use them to better my career rather than just take. That is the model that you should use for your friends. Rather than just give them and enable them, you give them positions, you teach them how to do things, and then they spread out and they make your brand bigger.
To your point, Phil Jackson called him a posse. Timeout.
TB12
is not a part of the media and calling him a posse. Come on, man.
TB12 is a brand.
You know how we talk.
We? Is Phil we? I'm just gonna say
anything that we think is appropriate, trust me, that legalizes everybody else. I don't care whether we can be as hypocritical as we want to be.
Lastly, Jordan had Space Jam. You forget about that.
Let's forget about that.
He had Space Jam. He had Hanes underwear. Yeah. Oh, but we forget about all that. It's cool because he was a brand too. However, TB12 is a brand, food and training. And then how did we get that footage?
Athletic greatness.
How do we get that footage? From a Facebook show. He's filming. You know how much it takes on the film?
He filmed footage
of his life. That's how you got to learn about the man. But however, whatever your interests are as an athlete, you can do anything with it right now. You can create. And the best part about the LeBron James crew is that the fact that they are able to do positive things. LeBron is at the head, and he's never by himself. It's him and Maverick Carter or him and Rich. However, let's take Rich Paul's example. I can give my agent this money. I can just throw that 4% wherever his way. Or my friend is sitting here doing something else. Why don't you take an internship, learn about the game,
I want to let Tony in, but I just want to.
I'm sorry.
I want to set the record straight. As when LeBron was getting killed by the media for Maverick and all those guys, I'm the guy that went in and wrote the piece and explained Maverick Carter and what LeBron is doing and put a positive spin on it. No one's in a negative space about what he's doing for Maverick, Rich Paul, any of that. And that's not the conversation we're having. We're talking about the greatest athlete of this era is Tom Brady, in my opinion. All the other nice stuff that LeBron is doing, I get it.
Still debate him. I believe he is the greatest football player right now of our era.
Greatest athlete
of
this era. Would I put him up there? Yes, I would. And I just came to this conclusion a couple days ago, actually, because I've always been like, there's no such thing as the best ever. And I say, even about myself.
Agreed. Yeah,
I
mean,
you might like Gronkowski. You might like Kellen Winslow. You might like Ozzie Newsome, whatever it is. That's up to you to decide. But I always talk about, are you in that conversation? Then I start thinking about Tom Brady. And first of all, the whole, you know, he's making a corporation. He should be doing that. I have no problem with that. But what separates Tom Brady for me now is his willingness to take less money. And that's something that I don't think is talked about enough. And I'm talking about during contract times. The reason they are so great out there in New England, and you look at it now, this guy, he's only making $20 million this year. And he had to go ask for a raise this offseason. Yeah. He is so committed to winning that he will take less money. Aaron Rodgers won't do that. Peyton Manning never did that. So who wants to win more? How badly do you want to win to go in there and say, you know what, I could be making $35 million a year. Tom Brady can go and he should be getting, if Aaron Rodgers is getting 33, Tom Brady should be getting 33. I think that's fair to say. But he's making $20 million. That's it.
That's honorable, but that's not something I would suggest to any player out there to not get full value.
I think after your first contract, why can't, I don't mean to cut you off.
No,
but after your first contract, I always say if you're a rookie, if Jared Goff, when it comes up, you win a Super Bowl this year with the Rams, and whatever, it comes time to get paid, you go get max contracts. You got to take care of yourself. After that, I would say, I don't understand. What do you need? What's the difference between 33 or 35 or 40 by the time he comes up? Why can't you just take 28?
How come the owners don't take a haircut when 28? They want to go in pursuit of
it? This is why Tom Brady's on my thing.
He's married to? Who's worth more than him? I can take that when my wife is doubling what I bring in. Look, we don't need that extra 12 for us to stay here.
Look, I paid 17 years. I made some good money.
You want to turn down $12 million?
But I'm just saying, I don't know. I don't know what I would do in that situation. How badly do you want to win? Do you want to surround yourself with the proper team that can get you those five rings? I think that's the extra step that most athletes won't take.
Would you have sacrificed $12 million?
Would I have done it? I don't know.
I do know.
Question.
I do.
You would have taken that $12 million.
Let me tell you the other reason why he could and why there's some truth to what Tony's saying. There is money to be made post-career walking around with those five Super Bowl rings that may be six,
Thanks.
As opposed to Aaron Rodgers, who's probably going to retire with one. There's money to be made. So Tom has made a long-term play on and off the field in terms of look at his marriage and marrying someone of that type of value. Again, all of his decisions, though, are consistent with being a dominant athlete. And that's not... Again, you can do the LeBron approach, but there's a price to pay, and I think it's the price is going to be how you're viewed when your career is over versus your potential. LeBron could have been the greatest of all time.
He's in the conversation.
He's in the conversation.
MJ wasn't the greatest of all time when he played.
Yeah, when he played.
When MJ, I grew up in the MJ era. I had kids that wanted to be Pippen. I had kids that wanted to be MJ. I wanted to be MJ, but he wasn't the greatest of all time while he was playing.
Right. You need that nostalgia.
He was not playing.
Stop.
He was not at that point in time.
Athletes. I'm a journalist. I know what we were writing and what we were saying.
And y'all destroyed him as journalists. His off-the-court antics, Atlantic City, the gambling.
No.
Why are you gambling on a golf course? I lived that, too.
After Jordan won those first three titles, and certainly when he won the next three, there wasn't any real controversy about him being the greatest of all time.
After three, there weren't
They let him have it, too, which is unfair.
Oh, no.
Not really. Man.
I don't remember it that way. I mean, maybe you got the manuscripts and what you wrote. Me just being a viewer and me being a guy trying to ascend to pro ranks, it was not unanimous that he was the best basketball player of all
Who
time.
Who was?
There was still conversation of Magic and Bird.
Have Celtics fans that say Bill Bird.
People say Bill Russell, the old school.
Right. Magic had five rings, and he had three. And you're saying that they were saying Jordan was better than Magic?
I got it. Jordan took a couple years off. When he came back and won those next three during his prime, Tom Brady has five. No one else has five.
I'm with that.
No one. He hasn't. If they had won, he might get six.
Crown him.
He's playing the most important sport, the toughest sport, and he's playing the premier position in all of sports. It's not remotely controversial that he is the greatest athlete of this era.
Don't you think Tom Brady got to the party a little later than even LeBron and other greats like him? Like, TB12 starting in 2016 tells me someone finally got to it, and I heard it was people like Gronkowski.
Just realized
it. Hey, you know what? You're leaving money out there on the field and off the field by saying, with this old adage that I'm first in, last out, and this is all I do. That sounds great. That's old focus. You're old school, so you think about focus like that. One dot on the wall, stare at it, football, football, football. Okay, that's cute. But then coaches started to tell us, like you said, the NBA, NFL, put more dots on the wall and learn how to prioritize those dots. And LeBron's been doing that from day one, and it seems like TB12 just got there.
Just got there how? He's got five titles and he's the MVP just last year. He has a chance to be an MVP.
It's greatness, not just best.
He's not focused on basketball, on football all year round.
Yeah. He's more focused than anybody else in sport.
He just hasn't realized this. He in Brazil doing this?
I don't know if he's more focused. I'm telling you, for me, the only thing that separates him from any of Peyton, Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers, all those guys, you can't say this guy is better than this guy. I don't believe in that. Right. But it is the cash. It is the cash. You sacrifice your paycheck to win those Super Bowls and rings. Why can't LeBron come out? LeBron's going to be a billionaire. I mean, he already is pretty much. Why can't he come out? I'm just saying, and I'm not telling him what to do, LeBron, if he is watching this. But if I was him, I would say at this point with the money I have in my bank, give me $5 million a year. That's it. And let's go surround ourselves. Let's go beat the Golden State Warriors. Because you're not going to beat them this year with that team. Go get some players. Why can't more athletes do stuff like
because
that?
Because I want a mutual respect from the person whose name is also on my check, the owner, to say, where's your haircut? If I'm in a barbershop, you come in with me, owner. Take a haircut. And the owners are not taking a haircut on profits.
Tom doesn't think that way.
I can't do it because you ruined it for the next man.
I'm going to put Marcellus in checkmate on that. Dan Gilbert and a lot of these owners, the Steve Ballmer, the Clippers, they go well above the salary cap and pay that luxury tax.
Yes.
So they do get their hair cut
often in
the NBA to win championships. Golden State's doing it. The Lakers will eventually have to do it. So the owners do take a haircut. Tony's question to me speaks to Brady's level of commitment is at a greater level than everybody else in sports. Now, I'm just sorry. Those are just the facts.
He should be commended for that. You're absolutely correct, Tony. I understand your logic in that one, but as African-Americans, we cannot not take our value because once one person does it, LeBron James, he sets a table for the rest of them. And when it's not appropriate for them, every owner's going to be like, listen, you know what? Why don't you do what LeBron James did and take this $5 million, even if you can't afford to do it? Because everybody can't. He's the
person.
He's
doing that. Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers signed for $33 million.
But when you have the ability to do it, when it doesn't affect your balance sheet, your home balance sheet, like it would if one person who's one income in that household is different than when you have two incomes and one is way higher than the other.
And it's grander than race. This is for a white athlete. This is for anybody who steps on the field. You know it. The time is ticking. You have a finite shelf life. You have a 3-year average and you could be great as you want to be and play 10 to 20 years, but it will expire. There's an expiration date on everyone's jersey. But it's not necessarily the same for the owners. So we're dealing in different time frames, different time realms. I am not going to take less in the pursuit of a championship when I'm not hearing anyone else who's a part of this same team, hand in the middle, sitting there saying they're going to do the same thing. Well, it has to be a collective effort.
Just like Jason just said, though, Tom has done that.
Yeah.
And that is the reason why I
would put it like that. And it backfired on Tom. Tom got upset when he gave money back for Wes Welker. And then they traded Wes Welker. And then he said, where's the money then? They said, oh, we kept
it. It backfired.
Well, backfired.
He's got five championship rings.
Oh, and the guys, he's worth gold when his career is over.
Gold.
He will be the epitome, whether we like it or not. And I'm telling you, look, it was right there for LeBron to get. He's not as committed to basketball as Tom Brady is to football. Again, we keep
But who's greater as an athlete?
Who's greater than an athlete? That's LeBron. Whose performance and accomplishments make them the greatest is Tom Brady.
Jason, you answered your own question. I love this fun fest we had, but the greatest athlete is LeBron, correct?
So you just said
Tom
it.
Brady,
that's a whole
Tom
different
Brady
conversation.
Tom Brady is LeBron James on the Golden State Warriors. He's the greatest athlete on the greatest team of the era. You understand that? Like, they their organization, the greatest.
Because
the greatest
they can pay
coach,
the players to right. be around him, though.
But they have a unique situation over there. Great coach, great organization, great player. LeBron James is not in that, in this, or is not in the same type of organization. Great owner.
We got to stop this at some point, and we'll stop it here. But again, we're talking about a 41-year-old athlete
balling,
still playing at the highest.
Absolutely.
We've never seen this before in the history of
all
sports.
But
let's dismiss it because we're all LeBron groupies in America now.
We got a 41-year-old out there doing things
we've never seen anybody do.
Greatest football player.
But we got to dismiss. He's playing the most important sport. He's playing the hardest position. He's got five titles. We've never seen a champion like this. He's made more sacrifice. He's more focus.
Hey,
it is what it is.
Uggs or LeBron 15s? What you gonna do? I mean, what you gonna wear? Thank you. It's just a big,
Aston
it's
Martin,
bigger than
Aston
this.
Martin commercial.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
cool,
I'm
man.
Gonna make 12 cars.
All right, welcome back. Whitlock and Wally. Tony Gonzalez is here, and we're joined now by Hall of Famer Rod Woodson. Let's move to some big stories, starting in Dallas, where the Cowboys offense finally showed up yesterday, blowing out the Jaguars 40-7. Dak Prescott put up his best game of the season, and afterward, even the Jags' notorious trash talker, Jalen Ramsey, didn't have a whole lot to say.
How much of a shock is it that this defense comes out and gets their ass beat, considering the talent you guys have?
I don't know, man.
You guys have played together a lot as a secondary. How do you kind of explain some of the blown assignments that you guys had early in this game?
That was fun.
Coach said that he felt like it wasn't an effort issue, it was a miscommunication issue. Do you agree with that?
I don't know.
Jalen, what challenge did Cole Beasley pose today?
I don't know.
Defense usually plays with, you know, a lot of swagger and confidence. What needs to happen to kind of get you guys motivated?
I don't know.
Love the hat, don't love the answer.
Now you don't want to feel the pain.
Marcel, Cowboys fixed or the Jaguars a mess?
Jaguars a hot mess. You look at the Jaguars and the expectations coming off the AFC Championship game. Some people suggested, and I think they internalized, that they should have won that game if they stayed aggressive in the second half. And what happens when you start to think like that, oh, we should have had that one, we get them next time, is that you don't go back to square one. And square one is how they got to the AFC Championship game with that vaunted defense and the running game. And what you're seeing now, especially the last 2 weeks, is time of possession coming back to kill this team. No Leonard Fournette. All of a sudden, you can't pound them. When you can't pound them, the defense that is so great is on the field to the tune of 38 minutes for the Cowboys. And then you look at the KC game, their tongues are hanging out of their mouth, and all of a sudden, they're not talking to trash. They're out there looking like trash. So I think right now, time of possession, no running game, is starting to erode this team.
I watched that game. I love the way Dak Prescott played. I think, didn't throw for a bunch of yards, but the 80-some-odd rushing yards coupled with the 182 in the air, I think the game was more about the Cowboys finding themselves and the Jaguars being a little bit of one-hit wonders last year.
You know, I look at the game and go with the Dallas Cowboys first. I enjoyed watching Dak play the way he played, all right? And I say that because he got to the first read, he went to the second read, and then he got out. And then that's who Zach is. He's not going to throw for 350 yards. He's
ever.
Not going to have those big games like that. He'll have a couple here and there in his career, but he should be comfortable with that. And then you give the ball to Zeke, has to touch the ball 25 to 30 times in the game, either rushes and passes. And he had 25. He had 24 rushes, one reception. So if they can stay within that mantra, that offense will be okay because that defense is a lot better than I thought it was going to be. Mm-hmm. It really is. It really is. And then, but when you look in Jacksonville, I think their defense is still good. They're not as good as what everybody thought they were going to be this year. You can't just show up and think you're going to be the best team in the National Football League week in and week out. But my key is for them is that I never been a fan of, and I never believed in Blake Bortles being that star quarterback who could take this team to the next level. If when you watch him play, he's the weak link of that whole football team. And if they don't have a backup quarterback and they don't have an answer to that to help this defense outside of the running game, it's going to be a long year for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
I agree with you what you said about Dak for sure. This is what you need to do. Because my new benchmark for quarterbacks in the NFL is you got to have 250 yards. But the rules, the way they're set up, you should be able to get 250 yards unless you are out there running for over 50 yards. Then you can have below that 200-yard mark. And him, I think he's had one game over 200 yards in the last six, seven games going back to last year. So use your feet, Dak. And that's the only way I will buy you as a franchise quarterback from here on out. And then looking at the Jacksonville Jaguars, I think the worst thing to ever happen to them was to come out and play so well against New England that second game. But that was fool's gold because that wasn't the New England team that we see now. And they got all big a little bit. And then Strahan talks about this. He said, when people have great success, AFC Championship games, Super Bowls, the hardest thing coming back next year is every player on that team thinks, we made it because of me. And when you have that attitude, that slows your progress down. And I think this is what's going on with Jacksonville. Ramsey is getting all that attention. Everybody thinks it's because of me that we got there. And now all of a sudden, that attitude creeps up on you. I had it. We went to NFC Championship game. We came back. I think we won two games the next year. It happens. This is why teams are so different from year to year.
Same might be true with the Philadelphia Eagles. That's a story for another day. All right, to a big story in the AFC North, where the Steelers continued their climb back into contention yesterday, winning a back-and-forth battle with the Bengals. Pittsburgh got a big game out of running back James Conner, and even Le'Veon Bell gave him props on Twitter. Bell is supposed to be coming back this week, but reportedly did show up today. Marcellus, would adding Bell make the Steelers a legitimate – oh, he did not. I'm sorry, did not show up today. Would adding Bell make him a legitimate threat in the AFC?
Absolutely. I think they're a legitimate threat without Bell. But you add them to the mix, then you got something to complement what they were last year, 13-3 despite having some issues. And this year, still a winning team despite having issues. And this is no knock at James Conner. But as a defender, when I see James Conner coming, I'm saying in my head, I could keep him in the box. That means I could keep him in the form of reality. Like everything he's done, I've seen before. But then when Le'Veon Bell's back there, I got to start using imagination. Like, he's going to play outside the box. He's going to jog to the line. He's going to pick his holes, and then he's going to make some plays. And he's going to catch the ball out the backfield and do some things that is just unorthodox. So what happens is a thinking defender is a slower defender. Then we don't react the same. Then we don't play the same. And advantage to you offense. You bring Le'Veon back, now you got something special on offense.
I like bringing Le'Veon back, but I don't have a lot of faith in Ben Roethlisberger not to do dumb things to cost him. And so when I look at the Kansas City Chiefs and the New England Patriots, I don't see the Pittsburgh Steelers on the same level as them because I just think that team's undisciplined and it starts with Ben Roethlisberger. That's the problem.
You know, I get it because Ben does try to make a lot of plays with that big body. He tries to hold everybody off. He tries to make some throws back across his body. But at the end result, normally in September, they don't play that well. For some odd reason, the last several years, they just start out slow. When they go to Cincy, I knew they were going to win that game because they own Cincy and Cincy. They just believe when they go on the road to Cincy, they go into the jungle, they're going to cut the jungle down. They believe that. And I think when Le'Veon Bell comes here, I'm hoping that Randy Feechner, the offensive coordinator for the Pittsburgh Steelers, I'm hoping he's thinking out of the box. That's what I hope. I hope that he puts both those guys, because I think Conner earned the right to carry that rock because he amplifies what the Pittsburgh Steelers, the old Pittsburgh Steelers is, the old steel mill, blue-collar guy running over people. He exemplifies that week in and week out. So hopefully, and they're two different type of runners. So hopefully he'll get Le'Veon out there, put Le'Veon out wide, put Conner in the backfield, vice versa. Have some creativity with your offense for those two running backs and put them on the field at the same time. If they can do that, because the defense has come around a little bit.
Yeah.
First two games, giving up 31 points a game. The last four games, only giving up 22. So they're coming around. I think there's still a work in progress, but Le'Veon coming back, they need a baller.
Yeah, huge upgrade. Huge upgrade. Just what the doctor ordered for that offense, for anybody's offense to get a guy like this. This is what the NFL is into now. We tracked it last week. Five running backs in the NFL are on pace to have more than 100 catches this year. That's only been done three times in NFL history, and five can do it this year. And he's that guy. He's that dynamic guy with the rules, the way they're set up. And guess what that does? Now you got to put an extra guy in the box. Now you can't really double team Antonio Brown every time. He's going to get happy. It makes everybody happy now. Ben Roethlisberger, I think, I know you said he's having a little bit of trouble, but I think this makes him immediately upgrade too and get better. This team just went from here to here as soon as he comes back.
I don't know if you guys had a chance to watch this game in its entirety, but I did from start to finish. I got to give Pittsburgh credit because that was a great game. I thought both teams played well. Both teams handled themselves well. It is a feather in Pittsburgh's cap. But again, when I go back and look at the quarterback play in New England, look at the quarterback play in Kansas City, it's better, it's more consistent
than what the Steelers get out of Ben Roethlisberger. He can look good in stretches, and then he can do some of the dumbest things you'll ever see from a veteran quarterback. And I know Tomlin takes a lot of heat for their lack of discipline. I've now come around to the conclusion a lot of it has to do with Big Ben. They got an immature quarterback who sets a bad tone and who does dumb stuff on the field. It's hard for me to trust Pittsburgh.
Well, it's a tough time to say that. I understand the message, but the timing may be off because he's been balling in the last few weeks. If you think about, this is a team that won 3 out of the last 4. If you look at him yesterday, 32 of 46, 360, touchdown, no interception. Ben's been doing his thing, and this is a team that is equipped to have the two-back system. Remember D'Angelo Williams and Le'Veon Bell being there, and D'Angelo Williams, a capable starting running back, decided to be a backup running back. So now we have a guy on a rookie deal in James Conner. That's a great 1-2 punch, like you said, a power, a thunder, lightning kind of package you could still go with. But Ben Roethlisberger, I think he gets greatly exaggerated, his demise or his issues, because when they happen, we blow them out of proportion, but then we don't return to reality and give them the full compliment when we see good numbers like yesterday.
All right, welcome back. Whitlock and Wally. Tony Gonzalez and Rod Woodson are back. Let's move to London.
No, let's stay in LA.
Where the John Gruden misery tour continued yesterday with the Seahawks blowing out the Raiders 27-3 and Derek Carr leaving the game with a shoulder injury after taking 6 sacks. But even before the loss, it looked like the Raiders could be going into a fire sale mode, with our buddy Jay Glazer reporting that Amari Cooper and safety Carl Joseph are on the trading block. Marcellus, is Gruden to blame for this disastrous start?
He is, and it's unfortunate. I hate to put it on a coach who's not making tackles or getting sacks. Ooh, that team can't get any sacks. But if you look at the mental construction of this team, there's one thing to have low expectations, and there's a difference of having no expectations. And when you give a coach a 10-year contract, $100 million, money in the bank, regardless of outcome, there are no expectations. So he comes in, he gets to gut the roster. He gets to go out there and look at guys and assess them in any way that they want to. And this was a team that was trying to rebound this year. Remember 2 years ago, a team that looked like they could really do some damage. Derek Carr gets hurt in the playoffs, then they come back next year, as you were saying before, with your Atlanta team, or we see right now with Jacksonville. Oh, we're going to be better. We're going to be better. And you got to go out there and earn your keep. They didn't. Now they have a coaching change, and then John Gruden, he's so comfortable. He's so comfortable that he is actually distant from the outcome, and he's distant from how these players are really approaching the game. So until you change that dynamic, I don't think he's going to be able to reach his collective group.
I think John Gruden's doing exactly what they're paying him to do. He's rebuilding and tearing the thing down and preparing them to move to Las Vegas, where they'll have more cash and they're really going to make a run. When I've watched them play, and I did not watch this weekend's game, but when I've watched them play, I've liked their effort and I've seen things strategically that I thought John Gruden was bringing to the table. I don't blame John Gruden. I think he's doing exactly what the Davis family wants him to do.
You know, they're the last 3 years coaching on the staff. And I've been a Raider fan since I've been a kid. I played for the Powell Raiders. So back in the mid-90s, mid-70s, I had Raider posters in my room. And I look at it, and yes, 2 years ago, 12-4. Mm-hmm. Had all the possibilities. Had a lot of talent. Still have talent on that roster. Then last year, 6-10. Not as good as we hoped we could be. And then everybody gets fired. All right, then you bring in John Gruden. And I think the only problem I have with John Gruden is that when he looks at the roster, team sports are perception sports. If the coach perceives you not to be a good player, you don't play like Carl Joseph. Carl Joseph can play. He can play in the National Football League. He's not a big safety, but he can play in the National Football League. And to tell me that these veteran safeties are better than Carl Joseph is untrue to me. I know I've seen him play, and I've seen these other guys play. And you know, I want to see them back to the dominance of the old Oakland Raiders, because it's always fun when the Oakland Raiders are winning to go against the other rival teams in the National Football League. But there has to be some accountability. And that's the only thing that worried me at the beginning of the summer. 10-year deal, no accountability. You can say he's looking good, he's doing some good things. He tore a team apart that had some good players. One of the youngest teams in the National Football League became the oldest team in the National Football League in 3 months. And that, to me, you can't win with just an old team. You have to have a good blend of youth and veteran leadership. And right now, it's a lot of veterans and not a lot of youth out there with the Oakland Raiders.
Yeah, I don't
I don't blame him yet. I still think we got to give him time. I mean, he's on that 10-year deal. It's just getting started. He's still adding ingredients,
though. That's unfair to the veterans who are sitting there who only have 3 more years.
Right. It's true.
4 more years. He has 10 more years. Yeah, but that's how it goes. That's unfair to them just for the fact that he's going to strip those guys away with the – because, look, they got a nice offensive line. That offensive line is not going to be there that much longer. Coop?
I feel like he's building for the – obviously, he's building for the future. That's why you trade away Khalil. You go out there, you're going to stockpile. I really believe he is following that pattern of Bill Belichick where we don't max players out. You don't max players out. All I'm saying is this. Maybe it could be this. He don't max players out, which the New England Patriots don't do, not even the quarterback. We already had that discussion. And you build through the draft. You start stockpiling your first-round picks. I wouldn't be surprised if Derek Carr is not there next year. I literally would not be surprised because he's going to go out. They're going to have a horrible record this year. It doesn't look like they're going to win too many games. They're going to get the first pick in the draft probably or whatever. That picks the trade. They're going to get a quarterback. He's going to start building the team like that. They're going to hit Vegas running. That's his plan. Now, will it work? I don't know if it'll work, but I got to believe there's a method behind this madness right now that he could have a better team right now if he would have just kept some players, but he's doing it on purpose because he's building for the future, and that contract gives him the time to do it.
Well, Rob is talking about is like this wasn't a turnkey franchise necessarily because they were 6-10, but much closer than a full demo. Like he's gutting this team to a place where you're like, what are you trying to build? And timing is everything. If I'm a player on that roster, he can't have a different calendar than I have because then I start to lose motivation and I start to lose the accountability from him and vice versa because coaches on a 10-year plan to sit there and say, once we get to Vegas, then the clock starts. And I'm like, my hand's in the dirt right now, Coach. It starts right now. So I don't see Gruden having his foot to the fire in the same intensity as his collective team.
I know he wants to win.
Yeah, of course.
Gruden is competitive. I know he wants to win. But I just think going about it where you have to gut everybody because you don't see the talent. And that's what I said. Team sports is a perception sport about coaches. You know, you could be sitting there, and I believe one guy's better than the other guy, and I play him, but the other guy really, he's the baller. The other guy's a cookie cutter. He fits the mold of what I like. Some guys, sometimes you got to look out of the box. And hopefully he will start looking out of the box. Hopefully, Tony, you are right, just for the Oakland Raider Nation, because you want to see that dominance back. You want to see the silver and black back. But right now, it doesn't look too good.
All right, welcome back. Whitlock and Wiley. Rod Woodson is still here. As you all know, I'm a journalist. And we've got our resident Ivy Leaguer, Marcellus Wiley, here. So we're going to put on our thinking caps and take a deeper look into the world of sports. All right, Darnell's here. Bring out Marcellus's thinking cap.
Uh-huh.
The Ivy Leaguer here with his motorboard.
Let them wear princely garbs. Stop, thief.
Thank you very much.
Now, as a Purdue grad, Rod, you're probably in over your head here with a ball.
Very much so. State school.
All right, let's move to the NFL. Where the shootout between Tom Brady and Patrick Mahomes was a fitting end to a Sunday chock full of high-octane offense. 4 teams scored at least 40 points yesterday, and even Brock Osweiler looked unstoppable, throwing for 380 yards against the Bears, allegedly great defense. Mm. Clearly, the league's efforts to emphasize offense have worked, with teams averaging more than 24 points per game, on pace for an all-time high. But while the league's theory seems to be that more offense is always better, I'm not so sure, and I'm going to use last night's Sunday Night Football game as my jumping-off point. Had there been some defense added to that game, we would have seen an all-time great game. We didn't. They've gone too far with this offensive deal. That game was diminished by its lack of defense, and if you really love football. The best game played was between Pittsburgh and Cincinnati, where there was offense and defense played. I just think we've overdone it with offense, and the removal, the making defense illegal, has actually hurt football.
I disagree about last night's game. It came in with tremendous hype. You heard the announcer say it. I felt it. It exceeded the hype to this point. When it was 24-9 at halftime, and, you know, the football player in me says, if Kansas City doesn't score quick, this game is over. So my behaviors are I'm about to watch the first drive of the second half and then watch some Ozark. I got to catch up. I'm on my Ozark. And they score quickly. And next thing you know, my primal instincts kick in. Not my theories, not what is best for the sport, not overthinking it. Just in reaction mode. And my wife's next to me and she's loving life because she's on Instagram while she's now unchallenged to just swipe up all night long while I am consumed by this great football game. And it takes me back to last year's Super Bowl, 41-33. It takes me last night, 43-40. High scoring gets the guy and the gal that's on the fence, the casual fan, the one who really doesn't love football, but is like, ah, see food, eat food. You see points, love points. And I'm in the same place even as a purist like you. I just love seeing the offensive go out there on the offensive level and just put up points galore.
You know, when you look at the game of football, and I'm a defensive guy, right? So, but I loved the game last night. I mean, even though it was a shootout, I loved the game. But then I go back a couple weeks, Cleveland versus the Baltimore Ravens. It was 12-9. I loved that game. I love the same game, but I know what Marcellus is saying is that the person who's the fantasy world, the people who live in that atmosphere, like seeing points on the board. And there's more of those people than pure football people like me.
I disagree.
All right? And because you look at it, and I'm saying, look, points on the board, it's ringing, it's ringing, it's ringing. It's like a slot machine. People
yeah,
like
right.
slot machines.
Right.
People like slot machines. Mm-hmm. Most people don't like that slow scoring.
No.
Dreaded, defenses hitting the mouth, quarterbacks getting hit, receivers dropping the ball. People don't like seeing the old school football. But the old real football people, we like to see that.
See, here's what I think everybody's missing out on. What people, and I listened to Colin Cowherd's show today, and Colin was saying, you know, people want to see scoring, people want to see the quarterbacks make all these plays. What people want to see is great competition. That's what attracts you to sports. Great competition. And so they want to see someone do something great against great resistance. And that's what we're missing with all of this offense, is we're missing the great resistance. If Patrick Mahomes throws four touchdowns against a great defense, wow, that's mind-blowing. Against the Patriots, and what Tom Brady, and again, Tom Brady was terrific, and some of his long balls and dimes, it was great. But the Kansas City Chiefs, and this isn't just the fan in me as a Chiefs fan, the Kansas City Chiefs defense was embarrassing to me.
Yeah.
Embarrassing. Yeah. It was they were running the ball so easily with running backs not that talented. And I know they got the young Sony Michel, the rookie guy,
nice.
Or whatever.
Nice.
But I just don't see it. That wasn't Le'Veon Bell putting it on the Kansas City Chiefs. That wasn't some great offensive line putting it on the Chiefs. That was an average offensive line with slightly above average or average running backs that just shoved it down the Chiefs' throat. And I'm just people want to see great competition. They want heroes on both sides of the ball. It's hard for me to name, other than Dante Hightower, it's hard for me to name a defensive player. The
McCourty twins, Patrick Chung.
They were chasing people.
Trey Flowers. I mean,
name somebody on the Chiefs defense.
You got them. Eric Berry, come back.
No, D-Ford, right?
Eric Berry, where are you?
Yeah, you know what's interesting? That if you look at defenses, like over the years, we've always said, oh, you know, steel curtain, and then we get an 85 Bears. Like, I just think that I'm not interested in a defensive struggle unless they have a nickname and they come in with this daunted reputation and I'm like, okay, I'm watching collective greats play defense. But offensive game, I just want to just see points go up and I don't give a damn who's out there doing it. And it's crazy because that is what we're talking about. The machinery of the NFL is trying to change, not the base. And I think your argument is pure to the base of football. It's trying to change the margins because like in any political discussion, any discussion, relationships, you're not changing the core of me. You're changing me on the edges. So what the NFL's doing is trying to change people that are on the fence, on the edge. And it's a smart play for them because the Jacksonville defense 2 weeks ago was amazing. And then they saw KC and whatever you think of Dallas. Now, all of a sudden, what is a great defense if it gets exposed by even greater offense?
You know, I look at it, and yes, they've changed a lot of the rules. They've changed, they're talking about quarterbacks are overprotected, you got the defenseless receiver, but that still shouldn't dictate to you as a defender how you play. So, and I say that by, think about Speaks.
Yes. Defensive lineman. I'm glad you got there.
For New England. He hit Tom Brady. He didn't bring him to the ground because he thought he threw the ball already. He thought he released the ball. But his interview after that in the locker room said, I will never do that again. So he's going to learn. And the really good ones don't let that yellow flag dictate how they're going to play. They're still going to shoot through the receiver. They're still going to play as physical and fast as they need to play on the defensive side. Staying on top of a receiver is like coverage 101 rules.
Right.
We've seen guys in bump and run all day long. Bump and run is not good in the National Football League unless it's called. But they're playing that way on a consistent basis, and quarterbacks are just taking shots down the field. You know, so I think the rules have changed some of the dynamics of the defense and what you can and cannot do. But the basis of who you are as a player, you still got to be a competitor and go challenge a guy.
But don't let him off the hook. Don't let Speaks off the hook. Like, I heard his reaction, and I saw all the sympathy cards going in the mail all the way to Kansas City. The rule change made you act like that. There's not an NFL rule says don't tackle the quarterback.
Don't take him to the ground.
So the first, there's no rule that said you can't take him to the ground.
Have you asked Clay Matthews if there's not a rule that says don't?
Clay Matthews was guilty with your body weight. Slam your son like that, I dare you. You're not.
They
tackle the quarterback like he's your son.
They fined T.J. Watt $20,000 for touching
that
the guy's
knee. That one was bad. Now, that's ridiculous, that's not what he could have done. In this moment, you know what? He's a rookie, thrown into action.
Yeah.
And, you know, Houston's out. And he's like, oh, my God, this is a big moment. And then he's like, oh, let me be overcautious in this moment. But guess what? Do your job first. To Rob's point, you don't sit there and say, because I'm scared of the infraction, I'm not even going to do my job first.
Why would... I can't believe you're not sympathetic and can't understand that the rules that they put in have made people, instead of just playing the game, these guys have to overthink the game. And that play, again, I'm a Chiefs fan, but that was just one of the plays that just made me sick. And I immediately, when Chris Collinsworth called it out, I thought it was a great catch by him to see that happened.
Yeah.
And then it just made me say, see, this is my problem, man. They're making it so hard on the defensive guys, they don't even know when to tackle.
Meek Mill said there's levels to this, and there's levels to this. The first level is get him on the ground and do that.
Do your job first.
Do your job first in the most gentle manner you can. Like, a sack doesn't – you don't get two sacks for slamming them. You don't get two sacks for lying on them.
Right.
You get a sack for wherever way you get them down.
Welcome back. I'm Jason Whitlock. He's Marcellus Wiley. Time to put Marcellus on the spot and get into some of today's hot button stories in a segment we like to call Tell Us Marcellus.
All right, rhymes.
Let's start in Denver, where Emmanuel Sanders was heated after the Broncos lost to the Rams yesterday, calling the league soft because he was called for taunting after a long catch. The penalty ended up derailing a potential touchdown drive, and the Broncos had to settle for a field goal in a game they lost by 3 points. All right, Tell Us Marcellus. Do you have an issue with Sanders calling the league soft?
Yeah, I do. I have an issue with anybody when you do something you shouldn't do, and then you really get mad at the fact that no one's coming to bail you out. Like when you cross the line, you're saying, okay, I deserve penalty, but I don't want penalty. And then you try to get all, like, big issue with it and say, buzzword, NFL soft. And you're like... To me, this is a sad place where the game goes when the players are taking the shots at the game instead of understanding that the game is trying to go and grow, and you should be there to help fuel that process.
I'm going to go a different route. I have no respect for what he's saying, and this is an indication of where a lot of young athletes have gone. Everybody's a victim.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Everybody's a victim. He didn't do this to himself. It wasn't his taunting. It's the league, and I'm a victim of a bad NFL rule. No, Emmanuel Sanders thought he scored a touchdown.
Yep.
And decided he was going to celebrate, and if he got a taunting penalty, that would be 15 yards on the kickoff. When they ruled, no, you actually touched down at the one. You were touchdown. He wasn't planning on that. He thought he had scored a touchdown. So now that backs him up to the 16-yard line, 3 plays, kick a field goal, cost his team 4 points, right, basically. And they lost the game by 3 points. And instead of being man enough to say in front of the media and all your teammates, man, I did something really foolish and stupid, cost us some points, and it ended up costing us a game. And it will never happen again. Like the Breland Speaks said,
right,
I did something it'll never happen again. He plays the victim card, which I'm just tired of from young athletes.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to go big picture maturity, but certainly as a professional, your professionalism comes into call and into play, and your maturity as a player, because that's an obvious moment where you have to eat it. There's an obvious moment where you just got to say, that's on me. Because by the letter of the rule and the spirit of the rule, you're in violation, but you're now saying, mercy me, after I'm the one who did the violation.
All right, let's move to college football, where Florida coach Dan Mullen got into a heated exchange with Vanderbilt's head coach Derek Mason after a targeting call against a Florida linebacker who hit a defenseless Vandy player on a punt return. All right, tell us, Marcellus, are you actually okay with the coaches getting into it here?
I am, man, and I'm feeling the internal contradiction, even me, the father, trying to say, yeah, go out there and fight for your team. I wouldn't tell this to my son, but certainly there are a few moments in professional sports that are gift wrapped like this for a coach, because every single player has always looked at their coach and said, I wonder if he can do this, the stuff he's barking at me to do. And more importantly, will he do this? Would he do this? And then you get a moment like this where you can say, I'm the 12th man on the field, y'all. I'm coming across this white line to let you know I'm fighting for you guys. So, yeah, you shouldn't try and find these moments, but when they present themselves, Dan Mullen, Derek Mason, go get it for your team.
The momentum, I believe, in this game swung Florida's way after this, and so it worked better for Dan Mullen. Although, look, I felt like Derek Mason had every right to go out there. His player was hurt, and I'm sure he said something about, hey, man, that's a dirty hit. I hope you ain't coaching him that way, or said something that sparked this. I don't blame Derek Mason. I saw the Vanderbilt players all hyped and everything afterwards, but the momentum actually swung to Florida. They came back and won the game, kind of blew up in Vanderbilt's face.
Fun fact, full disclosure, Dan Mullen and Chip Kelly coaches at Columbia University, the Columbia University. So let you know there's greatness in football even there at our academic school.
All right, to Houston, where the Bills lost to the Texans after a couple of Nathan Peterman interceptions. But Peterman wasn't the Bills' only problem, with wide receiver Kelvin Benjamin reportedly refusing to run routes with Josh Allen before the game. Benjamin denied Allen asked him to run routes. All right, tell us, Marcellus, is Benjamin getting too much heat for this?
He is, man. And I wish he should have been honest 100 in the moment, but I understand his reputation precedes him, and he didn't think that people would go to bat for him. But I heard you, Kelvin. Here's the thing. Hey, rookie quarterback, you know we have practice every day, right? Don't get out here and now tell me we got to practice a little bit more for all these reporters and their viewing purposes instead of handling business before we get to the game, because I got my pregame routine, and it doesn't include doing extra reps for you. That's not going to help me. And veterans know this. You don't disrupt someone's pregame ritual. On a network that is showing all these baseball playoffs, Fox, the great network, I see commercial after commercial talking about pregame rituals. You don't mess with a guy's pregame ritual, and he went out there and did it. Yeah, I would tell him to shine off.
You can start a new ritual when you're Kelvin Benjamin and you're being close to getting run out of the league. You got this bad reputation.
I knew you.
Look, man, Josh Allen, if that's Peyton Manning asking him to run routes before the game, how you think it plays then?
Well, Peyton Manning ain't doing it, because Peyton Manning, like, I ain't doing a production for these reporters here.
Why do you think it's a production? Because why isn't he just trying to warm up and get on the same page?
Is there a number counter on our jersey say, okay, 1,437 times we're going to do this route? We did it Wednesday. We did it Thursday. We did it Friday. Did it Saturday. Why you need to do it right now, Rook? And Peyton Manning would never go there. I don't interrupt you before the show. You sitting here fine, eating your corn nuts and stuff. I'm just letting you eat. I'm not tripping. But now I'll come up to you, hey, man, you want to go over the A block one more time? You'd be like, dog, chill out, man. Be a vet. Trust yourself. Man, look, I'm with you, Kelvin.
You just compared Kelvin Benjamin to me. I'm the gold standard. Kelvin Benjamin, he's scout team. He's a dumpster fire. All right, welcome back to the show. It's time to delve into the social media world, into the abyss of social media.
Abyss? You deep in it then, boy. You all on Twitter.
All right, Darnell Smith, our social media manager, is here. Darnell, to give us the best and worst of social media. Mm. It's all the worst. Darnell, what you got?
Yeah. All right, starting off with a topic you guys discussed earlier with the Raiders. We know they've had a disastrous season so far, but Bruce Irvin is still living his best life despite the blowout loss in London to the Seahawks. Take a listen.
We lost, but I got a beautiful wife I get to go home to, boy. We're going to try to make some babies, man.
social media had a pretty divided response. Some people called Bruce Irvin the GOAT for keeping things in perspective, where others were upset the captain of the team was so nonchalant about the loss. And here's a gem from the Jake Smith. John Gruden is going to find a way to trade the babies in the womb.
Oh, my.
Y'all like Irvin keeping it 100 here?
I don't mind it because a lot of times this is what gets you through an NFL marathon season that starts out, what are they, 1-5 right
one
now?
1-5, yeah.
Yeah, 1-5. And, you know, that's if mama can keep you happy during the 1-5 season, I don't blame Bruce Irvin.
Yeah, and when he went, I was like, oh, yeah, he about that. that plane can't go fast enough to get across that water. But, you know, this really highlights the production that we have to see post-game in the NFL and fans want to see, and I hated it all the time. When we lost games, I always felt like, hey, I left it all on the field. Not more I can do. Can I live my life? And fans are like, hold up. I need to see tears. I need to see depression. And I love a guy when he's like, no, I'm not going to fake it. I did the best I could do, and that's over. And then next week, I'll be back for it.
As a fan, I want the games to mean as much to me as they do to the players. And so I don't have a problem with Bruce Irvin here, but I do like to see tears from time to time because I have cried after games.
Even if they're fake. Yeah,
even if they're fake. Just give me something. All right, Darnell, what's next?
Yeah, to another team that got blown out this weekend. Blake Bortles and the Jaguars offense looked pretty terrible, scoring only 7 points with a bunch of three and outs. Y'all talked earlier about Jalen Ramsey and how he was left speechless after the game. So I wanted you to check out this meme that our buddy Marcellus here posted on his Instagram.
All right.
When you talk crap about almost every QB in the league and you realize all of them are better than Blake Bortles.
Hey.
I think Ramsey tones down his QB trash talk now.
I don't. I think it's a momentary thing. Let him win a game and he's going to be right back talking smack again.
Yeah, and I wish he could keep it consistent. Like, no one word answers after you guys get spanked like that, give up 40. But my boy, shout out to Zen Master on Twitter, who sends me some of the most inappropriate memes ever. And every now and then, one is above board and I could post it. But yeah, man, it's amazing that the bully always finds his moment. You always find someone who says, finally, hey, come here, Gooch. It's time for me to swing back. And boy, did the Cowboys swing back at Jalen Ramsey.
All right, Darnell, what's next?
Got to stay with the NFL. We're going to move on to Larry Fitzgerald, who's been having a down season so far, and things didn't improve this weekend when the future Hall of Famer wasn't even on the field during his 4th-and-goal play for the Cardinals. Fitz's dad, Larry Sr., didn't take it too well, posting these since-deleted tweets about Arizona's offensive coordinator Mike McCoy. Are you kidding me? Fitz not even on the field? Tough to win in the NFL. Cards head coach Steve Wilks appears to have put the offense in questionable hands. Fitz has never gone 6 games without a touchdown. Gosh, should Fitz tell his dad to zip it up here?
Big Larry might be watching. I'm a huge fan and friend of Big Larry Fitzgerald. Doesn't surprise me. A dad is always going to be a dad.
Ride or die.
First year in the NFL or last year in the NFL after 16 or 17 years. My father, my entire high school career, had a problem with Jeff George. Okay. Jeff George and I were on the same high school team. He's a quarterback, the number one player in the country.
Yeah.
My father complained all year to me that, how come you ain't getting that hype? You the key to that team. You the captain of the team. Yeah, yeah. They have no running game without you.
Yeah, yeah.
And I would have to say, Daddy, I play offensive line. He plays quarterback. He thought the papers and everybody should be writing more about me than Jeff George.
Right.
Daddy gonna be daddy.
Daddy gonna be daddy, right? I'm just so glad and thankful my daddy's not on social media. You know, let me just start there. They say when it comes to an end, especially in a contact sport, you fall off the cliff. Like, it's not just like this graceful fall. And I'm not sure if it's Larry's fault or does he want to be in on 4th-and-goal and triple tights. Like, I don't know if that's even the moment for Larry Fitzgerald. But this looks like it's coming to an end. And maybe there is some support from upstairs down. Like, let's not keep showing how good Larry Fitzgerald is if we're ever going to turn the page from him. So watch for that conspiracy theory.
All right, Darnell, what's next?
Yeah, I want to hear your guys' thoughts on the strange stories going on in the NBA, where Bob Muscala, the father of 76ers forward Mike Muscala, was discovered to have some insensitive tweets on an account linked to Muscala's dad's website. The 76ers and Mike Muscala have both apologized for the tweets, but some of them were screenshot before the account was deleted entirely, including this one about the Jimmy Butler situation. Butler behavior, not a dust-up. This is egomaniacal, African-American mental illness. The 76ers have had a cloud of social media issues hovering over their squad for the past 6 months. Do you like how the team handled this?
I do. I have some sympathy again for Mike Muscala, the son.
Yes.
Just because, again, I'll just add to that story I just told about. Trust me, my father played the race card on why I didn't get as much hype Jeff George.
Right, right.
It was because you black, you know, your favorite, the white guy, blah, blah, blah. So again, parents go off into some delusional, inappropriate places. This is far more inappropriate. I don't think it's a reflection of Mike. It's a reflection of his dad.
Yeah, exactly. Great job by Elton Brand, who's a former player, now GM of the 76ers, realizing how delicate a situation this is. And shame on Pops to ruin all the equity that I have gained over the years, because you may be a majority in the world, but you're a minority in this locker room, especially the NBA and basketball experience. Like, it's tough on the dude who walks in there and they're like, oh, you really belong here? And obviously he has gained great equity, and Pops tried to wipe it all away. So hopefully people who are smart can disconnect the two.
All right, Darnell, what's last but not least?
Yes, my favorite clip over the weekend coming from my very own FS1. So check this out. A-Rod and Big Poppy made a bet on the Red Sox and Yankees series, and A-Rod lost. So see what happened. Check this out.
Obviously, I got Big Poppy's pants.
Oh, baby.
That's
pretty good in
that. Well. I got one thing to say, Poppy. I'm a Yankee for life! Yeah!
Yeah! This is how we're doing it, fucked up! Yeah! Yeah!
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
You know, it's kind of weird to see A-Rod in a Red Sox uniform. Are you guys proud of A-Rod for taking on this bet?
Very proud. And his transformation from being a polarizing player to one of the most likable broadcasters in all of sports continues.
Yeah, proud of him. Not impressed. I've never been big on my skin in the game, or my wager is just putting on a uniform. Like, if I bet you...
Not much of a bet.
Yeah, right. If you say you got to wear a Ball State uniform, okay.
Did
I lose or not? Like, I wish the wagers were a little more skin in the game, but that was great fun. And one more thing, people who don't know and seen Big Poppy, he's not big. Like, I hear that you Big Whitlock. You Big Jason. You are Big Jason. Oh, big man. Poppy is not that big, but...
Medium Poppy? More
but
medium
that ain't,
Poppy.
But that don't roll off the tongue to say, right?
All right, great job, Darnell. Warren Central dominant over the weekend, as well as Ball State. Great job by us. All right, today we're talking about Tom Brady, who engineered yet another game-winning touchdown drive last night to take down Pat Mahomes and the Chiefs' high-octane offense. My rating for Brady is very high. I thought he had a chance of getting the perfect score, but I gave him a 25 in job performance, 25 in all-time greatness, 22 in authenticity, but I only gave him a 20 in character.
Character.
A little baby mama drama.
Oh, you went there.
That little deflate gate.
A couple gates.
And then anytime you have to delete everything in your cell phone, that's a sure sign of shadiness.
Right, right.
Because I got a little of that shadiness in my own deal. So you know, had to go to a 20 in character, a total of 92.
Still a goat, though. Still a goat. You never went to the Sprint store and be like, can I get the new iPhone? And where's your old one? Don't need it. What about your contacts? Don't sync them. What about your text messages? Delete it. Like, yeah. All right, that never happens at the Genius Bar. All right, let me give you my numbers, which obviously going to mirror you in terms of on-the-field performance. Job performance, 25. All-time greatness, 25. Character? Yeah, man, I had to put them down a little bit, 17, because... Say what you want, but those gates don't happen to everybody. You call it Spygate, Deflategate. You benefited from both or whatever. Innocence, guilt, somehow, some way, you're the common denominator there. And authenticity, 19, not as high as I wanted to. I was going to write it 20-something. I said, but his brand is a little too careful for my liking. Little risk, little reward. I wish that Tom Brady would do more, not get late to TB12 2016, and also... Say some stuff. You got a big platform. It doesn't have to be social. It doesn't have to be about all what's going on in the neighborhood for you. It's just use that to direct it to whatever you care for in a little more meaningful.
I don't think he can say anything.
Really?
Because the media is so against what I think he might believe that he just doesn't say anything. Look how much heat he took for the Make America Great hat just in his locker room. You know, someone put it there as a joke, or, you know, he's friends with Trump, and he took a lot of heat for that. That'll quiet you down.
Yeah, but look, since I dislike something, doesn't mean I gotta sit there and say, now I don't care for you. I'll just sit there and say, all right, I disagree, whatever it may be. But when you're on that level, that stature, that superstar status, it comes with the territory. The hate comes with the great, you know? So I wouldn't get persuaded to go a different direction because I'm getting criticism. Like, eat it, take it.